Okay, today's daf is Kaftet. We're going to start a few lines down at the words Ohev Zeshushbino. Before we start Shira, I want to just go back to something that was mentioned in the beginning of the parak when we learned the mission of Zeh Borer, and there was an issue of Edim being disqualified, where Rabbi Meir said one can disqualify the Edim of another. So someone in the class had mentioned that in American courts that can also be done, that someone can just randomly disqualify the witnesses of the other side. A few of the listeners pointed out that some people wrote me that that wasn't the case, and I just wanted to clarify that that wasn't, in fact, the case. It was a mistake. And in fact, according to American law, people can't just cancel the other side's witnesses arbitrarily. It must have just been an error of the that was said in class. Okay, moving on. Ohev Zeshushbino. So now we're finished with the complicated relationships of all the different people. Now we're moving on to the person. There was a machloket in the Mishnah about whether an ohev and a sone are disqualified from being witnesses. So who is the ohev? This is Shushbino, someone who's his groomsman at the wedding. Vikama. So now, interestingly enough, you would have thought, oh, it meant whoever was your best man at your wedding or, you know, was so close to you at that point, down the road, also wouldn't be allowed to testify for you. But now the Gemara clarifies that it's only while he's your Shushbino. So now they want to know, for how long does that mean? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Abba says the name of Rabbi Yirmiyah on the name of Rav, Kol Shivat Yemei Mishteh, all 7 days of the wedding celebration. Even from the first day on, he's no longer disqualified. Okay, so that means that only the day of the wedding, he's disqualified, but after that, he's no longer disqualified. But there is, 1 second, right, the Rama has a different way of interpreting this Gemara, and he actually says that the machloket about them is not about whether he's disqualified for 1 day or 7 days, but whether he was your groomsman for 1 day or your groomsman for 7 days. And that Rabbi Yirmiyah says that he's only going to be disqualified if he was your groomsman for all 7 days. Whereas Rabbanim would say, even if he was your groomsman only for the first day, he's still going to be disqualified, which comes out to a totally different way of understanding this Gemara. Hasone, kol shelo diber. So this was someone who doesn't speak to you for 3 days out of hatred. So where do they get that? Tana Rabbanan, vehu lo oyev lo, yidenu, velo mevakesh rato, yidinenu. Okay, this is from the psukim about someone who kills someone accidentally, and you're only considered an accidental killer if you're not their enemy, or you didn't intend to harm the person, right? Whereas if you were their enemy, then there's concern that actually you meant to kill them on purpose and kind of set it up that it would look like it was bishogeg, accidental. So they take this pasuk and they say, if he's not oyevlo, then he can testify for him. If he's not mevakesh rato, then he can judge him, which proves that if he is oyevlo or is mevakesh rato, then he's not allowed to testify for him. Okay, this is obviously not the pshat, it's a drasha. So they say, based on this drasha, eshkachan sone ohev minhalan. So that teaches us about a sone. But what about someone who is a close, someone who loves someone else? How do we know that he can't testify? So now they say like this. Kare behachi. Why don't we read the drasha like this? V'hu lo oyev lo v'lo ohev lo. Right, it says there, v'hu lo oyev lo, right, it doesn't exactly say this, but they're going to read it as, v'hu lo oyev lo, v'lo ohev lo yidenu, v'lo mevakesh ra'to, v'lo tovato yidinenu. Now, this obviously isn't what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, v'hu lo oyev lo, v'lo mevakesh ra'to. But they add the words, well, he doesn't hate him or love him. And he doesn't want to do anything bad to him, nor want to do something good to him. So any one of those two, you know, the itself and its opposite, are allowed to be testify or judge you. So now they say, but wait a minute, midi ohev k'tiv, it doesn't say ohev in the pasuk. So they say, el esfarahu, oyev mai taima, mishum demirachka da'ate. Ohev nami, mikarva da'ate. They just say, it doesn't say it, but it's just logical. Because just like someone who hates someone, because he's so distanced from them, he might, you know, he really hates him, he might actually testify against him falsely. Likewise, someone who feels so close to a person will also likely testify falsely in order to help him. So it's like the two sides of the same coin. Rabbanan. Now, if you remember in the Mishnah, Rabbanan disagreed with this shita and said, "No, in fact, the ohev and the sone lo nichshadu Yisrael akach." Right? They're not. We don't think that people will lie just because they love or hate somebody. So, what do they do? Hi, lo yev lo velo mevakesh ra'ato ma'dar shebe. What does he do with this? Chad ledayan. One is to teach about a judge, that a judge, in fact, even though one can testify for someone he loves or hates, a judge is not allowed to judge someone who he hates or who's either loves or hates. And that's because we're worried about a judge favoring one side. And the second, in other words, the first is, lo oyev lo, we'll learn for a dayan. V'lo mevakesh ra'ato, kiditanya, what does that come to do? Like it says in the Braita, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, v'hu lo oyev lo, v'lo mevakesh ra'ato. Mikan l'shnei talmidei chachamim shesonim ze et ze. She'en yoshvim bedin ke'echad. It's a very interesting halacha. If two Talmidei Chachamim don't get along with each other, they can't sit together in judgment because we're worried that one might take a position just to oppose the person that he hates. So, and therefore, the judgment won't come out as truthful, and because of that, we don't allow them to judge together. New Mishnah. Ketzad bodkim et ha'edim. How do they check the edim? So how do we check to make sure that they're being honest? Hayu machnisin otan lecheder, uma'imin alehem. They would put them into a room and they would threaten them. Okay, soon we're going to see in the Gemara what exactly do they threaten them with. Umotzi'in et kol adam lechutzes. So after they put them in a room and they threaten them, then they remove everybody else from the room. Umishayrin et hagadol shebehen. And the only person they allow to stay in the room right now, though we'll see, it's not so clear if that's the case, but right now, the only person we assume they're going to stay in the room is the Gadol Shebehen, the older among them. V'omrin lo, and then they say to him, Emor he'achata yodea shezeh chayav lezeh. How do you know that this person owes money to the other person, right? They're assuming just a monetary case. Imamar, if, now we're going to give three options of what the person says. If he said, Hu amar li sha'ani chayav lo, he told me that he owes money to the other person. Or, Ish Ploni Amarli Shehu Chayavlo, or some random person mentioned that the debtor owes money to the creditor. In other words, not the debtor or the creditor, but some other person said so. Lo Amar Klum. Those are the first two options. So either the witness comes and says, the person himself told me that he owed the guy money, or someone else said that he owed the guy money. Lo Amar Klum. Ad Shiomar, the only way is chayav is if he says, Bifaneinu hodalo shu chayav lo matayim zuz. In front of both of us, meaning me and the other witness who's not here at the moment because they took him out of the room, but in front of us he admitted that he owes 200 zuz. Okay, obviously it doesn't matter if it's 200 zuz, that's just a random number. But now, what's the difference between, okay, obviously saying Ish Ploni Amar, at least someone else told me, well, that's hearsay. That we can understand. But what's the difference between the person himself, you know, the first case where the person said, the debtor himself told me that he's chayav to the person, as opposed to the last case, which is in front of us, he admitted that he's chayav matayim zuz. So there's a difference of opinion about what the issue is. One of the opinions says that, actually it's the Balaam Or, he says that in the first case, he admitted that he owed it to one witness at a time. In other words, the guy just said, he said it to me. And then the other witness says, he said it to me. That's different because then he just told each person separately. That's different than someone who, when you say bifaneinu hodalo, that means he set aside both of us together and testified in front of us. That's a much more legitimate argument, right? Where if the person himself gathered together two people and admitted in front of them, and we're going to see this case much more so in the Gemara where they're going to discuss this, we'll see what the issues are if someone just says it in front of one person, why that wouldn't necessarily be considered a valid admission. There was another opinion. The Ramban said that, right, in the first case, it's not necessarily a difference between whether he said it to one person or said it to two people, but in the first case, he just said it. Whereas in the second case, he specifically gathered them, Bifaneinu Hodalo, so he specifically specified that he wanted them to be their witnesses, which is a case we're going to see later in the Gemara when a person says Atem Edai. So there's a bit of a difference between making an admission in front of two people or just saying randomly, I owe someone money in front of two people. Well, again, we'll get into the distinction in the Gemara. B'charkach, after they ask the first witness and they get all his information, machnisim et hasheni ubodkim oto. And then they check the second one, in the same way they check the first. Im nimtzu divrehem mechuvanim, so assuming they both said b'faneinu hodalo shu chayav lo 200 zuz. Then nosim v'notzim b'davar. Then the judges figure, you know, sit and judge the case, or they figure out what the case, you know, what the details, what's accurate, make sure everything that they agree on the conclusion. Now what happens? So the judges now have to make their decision. If shnayim omrim zakai v'achad omer chayav zakai, if two people say he doesn't have to pay and one person says he does, then we go by the majority. He's zakai, doesn't have to pay. Shnayim omrim chayav v'achad omer zakai chayav. If two people say he's obligated and one person says he's not obligated to pay, then he becomes obligated again based on majority. Achad omer chayav v'achad omer zakai. If one says chayav, one says he's liable. The other says he's exempt. Afilu shnayim zakim or shnayim mechayvim, or two say he's. In other words, you have either two say he's exempt, or two say he's liable. Be'echad omer eini yodea, but one of them abstains. Okay, so whether you have it 50-50, right, two disagree and the third abstains, or two agree either which way, whether it's l'zchut or l'chova, and the third one says, I don't know, and I'm abstaining, then, we've learned this before, you no longer have three people judging because one abstained, yosifu hadayanim. Then we add two more in order to have three people actually deciding on the case. Gamru et hadavar, once they finish the case, right, this just goes back to what we said at the very beginning when we learned the beginning of the Masechet, that if one person abstains, it's as if he's not judging, and then we no longer have three. And in that case, you never only add one person, you always add two, so then we add two. And we keep adding two until we get a majority. Gamru et hadavar, once they finish deciding and they reach a decision, hayu machnisin otan, then they bring back them. Who them is, we'll talk about. Okay, the assumption right now is we're talking about the Baalei Din. The Baalei Din, at some point, they had asked them to leave, and now they bring them back in. Hagadol shebadayanim omer, ish ploni ata zakai, ish ploni ata chayav. So now the elder of the judges, or the bigger of the judges, you know, the more important, more prominent of the judges, says, this is, right, either you're exempt or you're liable. Uminayin l'chishe yotzei. Now notice what he said, right? We had cases where they didn't necessarily agree. So according to the Mishnah, what do you say? Either Zakai or Chayav, very simply. Now, what about the judge who disagreed? Let's say two said he was liable and one said he was exempt. So now they teach that L'chashayetze, the one who said he was exempt, lo yomar, ani mezakev ha-chaverai mechayvin, aval ma'yaseh she-chaverai rabu alai. How do we know that when he goes out of court, he can't say, well, listen, I thought the guy was exempt, but my friend said he was obligated, and so what am I going to do? I was overruled. Al zen emar, lo telech rachil ba'amecha, v'omer holech rachil megales sod. These two psukim apply to him, which is, don't go around tattletaling, okay, telling stories about people. Is don't go saying, oh, my friends thought this and I disagree with them. And holech rachil, someone who's holech rachil, someone who tattletales, is someone who is megalesod, who reveals a secret. Okay, basically we're saying he shouldn't reveal these things that were said between them confidentially in the court. These should never leave the court. And he's considered a lo telech rachil b'amcha, because a rachil is someone who is megalesod. We'll get more into this also in the Gemara. Okay, now we get to what are the threats that they use? What do they say to those witnesses to scare them? Amar Rav Yehuda, we're going to have three options, okay? We're going to basically start with one. Every time we have another option, we're going to say, oh, that's really not going to instill fear because people will say, oh, that doesn't relate to me. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Hachi Amrin Alehu. This is what we say. Nisi'im v'ruach v'geshem ayin. Nisi'im are clouds, even though Nasi often means a prince or a leader, but here it means clouds. Clouds, v'ruach, it's a pasuk from Mishlei, and wind and rain. There's clouds and wind, but there is no rain. That is ish mitalel b'matat sheker. Someone who boasts about some sort of false gift, okay, which they're going to assume that what it really means here is if you lie, then what's going to happen? You're going to have the clouds and the wind, but no rain is going to come. And rain is always seen as the ultimate, right? Now, who is the rain for? It's for people who are farmers. So Amar Le Rava, Rava's going to say, these Ezim can very simply say, Yachli Lememar, Shev Shne Hava Kafna, there could be a famine for 7 years, Vahabava Umana Lo Chalif. But the famine doesn't affect the craftsmen and the right, basically what it means is that these guys who are witnesses aren't necessarily farmers, and they can say, we don't really care about the rain, it doesn't mean so much to us. So we'll do whatever, we'll say whatever we want in court. That threat doesn't scare us. So therefore, since Rava didn't like this answer, what does Rava say? He comes up with his own. Elama Rava Amrina Lehu, another pasuk from Mishlei, the same parak, a few pasukim away. Mefitz v'cherev v'chitz shanun, ishone b're'eu ed shaker. Just like a hammer, a sword, and a sharp arrow is like someone who lies falsely to his friend. Now, this pasuk is more clear that it's relating to this case because it's talking about someone who lies falsely. And they're going to. What it basically means is you're going to die before your time if you lie falsely. So now, Hamarle Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says to Rava, again, they weren't necessarily, he doesn't necessarily say it directly to him. It's not clear they overlapped, but Rav Ashi says, I don't like that threat because Yachle Lememar, they could say very simply, Shev Shnei Havi Motana, there was pestilence for 7 years, V'inish B'lo Shnei Lo Shachiv, but no one's going to die before their time. It's all predetermined, and therefore, it's not going to affect me. Just because I lie falsely, I'm not going to die from this. So El Am Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi takes a different approach. Rav took the same type of approach as Rav Yehuda, but took it in a bit of a different direction. Don't say something that's relevant to the farmer. Say something that's universal, that could affect anybody. But then Rav Ashi says, I don't like this whole reward and punishment that, okay, if I do this, I'm going to die. Because people, it doesn't necessarily scare people. He says, I'm really Nata Marzutra, Bar Marzutra, Amrina Lehu. He says, I learned from Nata Marzutra, who said, this is what we say to them. Sahade shakre aogrihu zile. It's a very interesting thing. He says, false witnesses are even cheapened in the eyes of those who hire them. Where do we see this? Dichtiv hoshivu shnayim anashim b'nei Belial negdo, v'yiduhu lomar berachta Elohim v'melech. This goes back to the famous story of Izevel, when she wants to get the kerem of Navot, and they put Navot on trial, and they find two people who are willing to lie in court about him, and they, right, so what does Izevel say? Go find two people, right? She's basically saying, go find two people who will be willing to testify falsely about him and say that he cursed God and the king. But what does she call them? She says, go find two b'nei Bilya'al, two bad guys, two guys who are worthless. So we see that even the person who hires them thinks they're worthless. And this is what Rav Ashi says, is we tell them, you guys think that someone's hiring you to do this and they respect you for doing this, but no, even they have no respect for you. And he basically gets into, you have no self-worth. And it's, you know, if you're going to lie, there's basically, you know, even the people who hire you don't even think you're worth anything. Okay, now moving on to the next section. Imamar hu amar li ad shiamru. Remember, we had all those options. If he could say, he testified, right, the guy himself told me that he owes the money, as opposed to ad shiamru, the only way they're going to make him obligated is if they say, b'fanenu hodalo shuchayav lo matayim zuz. So now they're going to say, misayel el Rav Yehuda. This Mishnah supports Rav Yehuda. Da'am Rav Yehuda amarav, tzarich shiomar atem edai. In order for someone's admission to be considered an admission that we can use in court, you have to say, atem edai. You have to say, he had to have said at the time of the admission, I want you to be my witnesses. Otherwise, we don't accept this as valid testimony. Itmar Nami, it was also said, Amar Bichia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mana li biyad chava, Amar Lohen. If somebody goes over, okay, this is the same kind of statement. Somebody goes to someone else and says, you owe me money. And the guy says, yeah, you're right, I do. And l'machar amar lo tenehuli. So then he goes to him the next day and he says, okay, so give me the money that you admitted yesterday that you owed me. Amar mishateni b'cha patur. If he says, oh, yesterday you said to me, I owe you money. And I said, yes, but I was just joking. Obviously, I don't owe you money. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? Okay, that's what's called mishateni b'cha. And that is a claim that's acceptable in court. Okay, we came across this in the past. Now we're going to see it again, which is if somebody says, oh, I didn't really mean that, right? Then he's believed. Tanya Namihachi, here's another braita that says the same thing. Maybe they think it's so unbelievable that this is the case, so they keep bringing more support for it. Mana li biyadcha, amar lohen. Again, the same case. It's a braita that basically says the exact same thing. If somebody says, you owe me money, and the guy says, yes, you're right, I do. And lemachar amarlo tenehuli. And tomorrow the guy says to the guy, next day he comes and says, so give me the money. And he says, amarlo mishatani b'chai. I was just joking. I didn't really mean it seriously. He is, in fact, patur. And the assumption is that he didn't really think, he didn't take the guy seriously. And you're allowed to claim that I didn't take you seriously. V'lo od ela. And not only that, but afilu hichmin lo edim achorei agader. If let's say the guy who said mana li biyadcha, you owe me money, he hid witnesses behind the fence so that, right? He basically hides these witnesses. Ve'amar lo, and then he says to him mana li biyadcha, and then amar lo, the guy says hein, it's true, and then he says ritzon chasha todeb ifnei ploni uploni, are you willing to admit that in front of witnesses? Amar lo. Mityareani Shema Tachpeni Ladin, no, because I'm worried you're gonna take me to court on this. Lemachar Amarlo Tneuli, and the next day he says Tneuli based on the two witnesses that heard him originally say Auyumani, Amarlo Meshatani Bacha Patur. And if he says to him, no, I was only joking yesterday, he's actually exempt. The Braita continues and says, Ve'ein Toanin Lemesit. But we can't make a claim on behalf of a Mesit. Okay. First of all, the sentence makes no sense. It's totally out of context, which Lamar is going to say in a minute. What's a mesit? A mesit is someone who sways someone else to worship Avodah Zarah. Toanim means that we don't help him make a claim in court, meaning if someone doesn't know what kind of claim he can make, but he actually does have a claim he can make, but he doesn't know it, we teach him that he can do that. Now, ein toanim means the court doesn't tell him, oh, maybe you want to make this claim. Okay, so now, hold off, because it's not really clear what's going on yet. We'll understand this much better in one more minute. So now, we quoted this Mishnah, this Braita, because it had to do with our case. We got into this Mesit. So the Gemara is going to say, wait a minute, Mesit, and then we're going to go back to the Mishatani B'cha. Mesit, Mandachar Shameh, where all of a sudden did a Mesit come into the picture here? So they say, ah, Chisurim Chasra V'Hachi Katani. There's words missing in this Braita, and this is really what it should say. Im lo ta'an, ein to'anim lo. Going back to the Mishatani B'cha, if we were in a situation and you came over to me and said, you know, you owe me money, and I said, you're right, and then the next day you try to claim the money, and I don't know that I could say, oh, I was just joking yesterday, okay? Because again, what's the difference between that case and the case we talked about earlier? In the earlier case, we said, when can that admission be an obligation that I would have to pay you the money? If I said, I want you guys to be my witnesses, atem edai. But if I didn't set up witnesses, then it's not considered an admission. So if you come to take me to court the next day, and I don't know that I can claim Mishatani B'cha, Toanim, which means what? The baiting comes and says, okay, wait a minute. Im lo ta'an, right, sorry. Im lo ta'an, if I didn't make the claim Mishatani B'cha, you come the next day and claim the money for me, and I didn't say, oh, I was only joking, then ein Toanim lo. The court doesn't say, oh, you know, by the way, you can make a claim if you want and say you were just joking because you never said atem edai. So only if I come and say I was joking, then we take it as a claim. But the court doesn't teach me to claim a claim that I could have claimed even if I did. However, bedine nefashot, but if I'm going to get killed for what I did, af agav delo ta'an, to'anim lo. if I had a claim to exempt me from the death penalty, then the court teaches me. They tell me, by the way, do you know that if you claim this, you would get out of the death penalty? In that case, Tohanim lo, except for one exceptional case. And what's that case? The Ein Tohanim l'Mesit. He's the only person who's chayav, the death penalty, who the court, if there is some sort of claim to make for him, the court won't claim, it won't teach it to him. Okay, if he makes it himself, then okay. But the court won't advance a claim on his behalf. So now the Gemara wants to know, why is Mesit any different? Maishna Mesit. I learned it from the lecture of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Shane Mesi de Rachmana Amar lo tachmo velo tachase alav. There's a special pasuk mentioned by Mesit where the Torah says you should not be merciful upon this person. You should not ever have mercy on him. So having mercy is basically the court saying, well, let's give you, we feel bad. We don't really want you to get the death penalty. You could have made a claim. But in the Mesit's case, we don't allow that. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Now we're going to have a different explanation. Minayin is going to be a very interesting one. Minayin she'ein tohanin l'mesit. Where do we know that you can't make a claim for the mesit? Minachash kadmoni, from the original snake, okay, from the Eitz Hadat. De Amar Rabbi Simlai, harbe ta'anot hayalo l'nachash lit'on, v'lo ta'an. The nachash could have gotten out of what he did by making lots of claims, but he didn't happen to claim them. Umipnei mat lo ta'an lo kadosh baruch hu. Lefisha lo ta'anhu. So why didn't Hashem say, listen, you know, if you claim this, you'd be okay, right? Because God would have acted as the court in that case. And the reason is because he didn't make the claims himself. And therefore, we learn from there that when there's a mesit, because the nachash was a mesit, he basically turned Chava away from Hashem. So now the question is obvious, which is what could the nachash have claimed? Right? What were his options? My havalei lemeimar, he could have said divrei harav v'divrei tami divrei mi shomim, divrei harav shomim. It's true that I told, right, what could the nachash have gone to God and said, listen, it's true that I told Chava that she could eat from the tree, but you told her she can't eat from the tree, and you're the Rav, and I'm the Talmid. And anyone knows that if the Rav tells them one thing and the Talmid tells them the other thing, who are they going to listen to? The Rav. So it wasn't my fault she listened to me. It was obvious that she was supposed to listen to you. The fact that she listened to me isn't my fault. So that's what he could have claimed. Okay? Think one second. Right, there's some other, because they say harbetan or hayalo l'nachash lit'on, and they only mention one, so the Maharsha adds another one. He says that it was Chava's fault, because she, we're going to see in a minute, she added, she was mosif, okay? What happened? I'll already get to what we're about to get to in a second. Maybe we'll get to it, and then we'll come back. Amar Chizkia, another thing we learn from the Chava story is, minayin shakola mosif gorea. How do we know that if you add, right, adding sometimes causes, right, it subtracts. Okay, if you do too much, then sometimes it makes it worse. Right, the Am Shenemar, Amar Elohim, lo tochlu mimenu, velo tig'ubo. What happened? Chava said that, what did she say? She said, Hashem told me not to eat from it and not to touch it. And then what happened, right? So then she touches it and she sees nothing happen. So then she thinks, oh, right, the Nachash basically says, oh, look, nothing happened. You can now eat from it. So they're saying that that he could have claimed that it was Chava's fault. It wasn't my fault. She was the one who was Mosif. She added on and said, God said not to eat and not to touch. When really, Hashem had only said not to eat. And he never said not to touch. So now we're going to have three explanations for how we know Shekol Mosif Gorea. So the first we learn from Chava, and that connects to the previous section. But the other two are going to be totally from a different place, which is how else do we know that if you add, it's actually Gorea? Totally a different type of proof. Rabbi Sharshi Amar Mehacha, you can learn it from here. Amatayim Vachetzi Orko. What's Amatayim? Amatayim is two Amot. But if you get rid of the Aleph, what do you have? Matayim, which is 200. So if you add an Aleph, you actually make it much less. Same thing with what Ravashi says. Ravashi Amar, Ashtei Esrei Yiriyot. Ashtei Esrei is 11 Yiriyot. If you get rid of the Ayin, you end up with Shtei Esrei, which would be 12. So 11 is less than 12. Okay. Amar Bai. Now we're going to go back to the Mishatani B'cha. Lo Shanu Ela De Amar Mishatani B'cha. This is all if the person comes the next day and says, I was just joking when I said that. But if you hid witnesses and there's witnesses that saw him say yes, and then he claims later, Meshetani Bacha, so that's okay. But if he says, Aval Amar lo hayu dvarim me'olam, huchzak kafran. But if he says, I don't know what you're talking about, I never said anything like that yesterday, then well, we have witnesses to support the fact that he did make a, he did say, I owe you money. And then we assume he's lying. However, this is a subject of disagreement. It's very interesting. I think we also saw this before. Amar Papa Beredor of Achabar Ada, Hachi Amrina Mishmei de Rava. He says, this is what they say. That was Nehemiah's Abai said it. Now he says, Rava actually is known to have said this. Kol mile dechti lo dechire inshe. Anything that you say that's not of significance, you're not expected to remember. So if you said to me yesterday, you owe me money, and I said yes, but I didn't really think that I owed you money. When you come the next day and say, hey, yesterday you said you owe me money, if I say, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't remember that, right? How many times do we not remember things we said? Because so many things we say are insignificant, and we just don't pay attention to them. So if we say the next day, I don't know what you're talking about, it's very common. I'll say, I don't remember what you said. I said that yesterday. I have no recollection. So he claims that in a case like this, you could even say, lo hayu dvarim me'olam. And in fact, we passed in this way. Okay, that you can say, lo hayu dvarim me'olam. Okay, now we're going to have a bunch of cases. Hahu de'achman le'edim l'chaverte b'chilte. The guy hid witnesses in the canopy. There was a canopy bed, and he hid witnesses up on the top. Amarle, he says to him, manali biyadcha, you owe me money. Amarle, hen, the guy said yes. Amar, eirai v'shachvai lehave alach sahadeh. Are you willing to have all the people sleeping awake and all the people sleeping be witnesses to this? Amarle, lo, he says, no, I'm not. Amar Rav Kahana, ha'amarle lo. So Rav Kahana says, look, he said no, I don't want them to be my witnesses, which proves that he could claim later, Meshatani b'cha. Hahu de'ach min eidi b'kivrei l'chavrei. The guy, they were talking by a graveyard, and he hid witnesses in the grave, strange place to hide people. Amarle manali biyadcha, amarle hein. Chayayu meitai lehav alach sahadeh. The living and the dead are going to be witnesses. Amarle lo, he says, no, I'm not interested in having witnesses to what I, to this conversation. Amar Rabbi Shimon, ha'amar le'lo. So again, Rabbi Shimon, last time was Rav Kahana, this case was Rabbi Shimon, says, look, he said no, so therefore we don't accept them as witnesses, and therefore the guy can claim, I don't know what you're talking, you know, I never said that, or a mishatani b'cha. Amar Ravina v'itema Rav Papa. Now, Ravina, or some people say it was Rav Papa, said, shma mina meha, you can infer from both those cases, da'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, Tzarich Shiomar Atem Edai, that when Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that he has to say Atem Edai, Lo Shnachi Amar Love, it doesn't matter who's supposed to say Atem Edai. So they claim that from these two cases that we just saw, what did the rabbis in each case say? That because the guy said no, therefore he wasn't willing to have them the witnesses. But if the Love, it doesn't matter if one of them says Atem Edai, Lo shnachi amar love. It doesn't matter if it was the borrower himself who said it. That's the case that we assumed, Atem Edai, that the love said, I'll admit you in front of witnesses. The lo shnachi amar malve vishatik love. Or even if the malve said it, but the love didn't say anything. In other words, if the guy in that case had said, the chayayu meitai lehave yale sade, and the guy just didn't say anything, the assumption is, because he said, right, they specifically said because he said lo. But if he didn't say lo and he was just silent, then that would have been sufficient. So Tamad Amar Le Love Lo Aval Ishate Kachinami. But if he was just silent, then that would mean he is liable. He agrees to the fact that there's witnesses and he's willing to admit it. Hahu Dehavakar Le Kav Rashu. There was a guy who they called him a Kav of debts. Kav is a measurement, right? In other words, this guy was assumed to owe a lot of money to a lot of people. Amar. So the guy said to try to get people to understand that he doesn't really owe money. Ma masik be ela ploni ploni. I only owe money to so-and-so and so-and-so. Now, what happened? Now, those so-and-so and so-and-so had never claimed he owed them money. He just said, leave me alone. I only owe money to so-and-so and so-and-so. So the next day, atu tavu ledina, or who knows what, whether it was the next day or down the right at some point, they came and said, you said you owe me money, right? Tavu ledina kamedya Rav Nachman. So Amar Rav Nachman, this also connects to something we saw in Bava Batra, Adam asui shalola haspiat atzmo. People like to show that they don't have a lot of money because they don't want, one of the reasons we gave was because they don't want people coming to think that he's wealthy and maybe bring on an ayin hara. Or another reason is that they don't want people asking them for loans all the time. So he might have just said that, shelo lasviat atzmo, but not necessarily because he really owed them money. And therefore, and interestingly enough, the halacha is that if the person, if someone never asked the person to pay them back, okay, in other words, you'd have to say it's a case where this person didn't say, oh, you owe me money before the guy said it. But if somebody randomly says, I owe money to so-and-so and so-and-so, they can't come and claim that they're owed money by this person because of this concept of adam asur shelo lahasbiat atzmo. Okay, there's a bit of a machloket here about that. Hold on a second. Right. There's a bit of a debate between, I think it's the Raman, the Tor, about whether if when the person said, I owe so-and-so and so-and-so money, it has to be that they weren't present at the time. And if they were actually in the room, then we assume that he really does owe them the money. And it's, right, so one opinion says they have to be have been in the room. In other words, number one, they can't have claimed earlier that he owed them money. And number two, they have to have not been in the room at the time. Because the assumption is he just picked some random people, said their name, and then they heard later, oh, so-and-so said this, and then they go claim. And then they can't claim. But the Torah says, as long as they never made a claim beforehand, even if they're in the room, then, right, even if he was there, oh, sorry, it's the Rambam versus the Tor. The Rambam says that he can't, that the people had to have not been there, and the Tor says even if the people are there, he could still claim he did it shelo lasbiat. That's it. Okay. Ha'uda habakarele, another case. There was a guy who, they called him Achbura de Shachivat Dinari. He's like a mouse who just sits on his dinarim, meaning he's stingy, okay? He doesn't benefit, or he's a miser. He doesn't use his money at all. He just sits on his money all his life. Kika Shachiv, when he died, okay, or he was on his deathbed, Amar, Planya Uplanya Masku Bezuze. He says, by the way, it's true, you know, you think I've been sitting on my money all this time, but it happens to be I owe money to people. Okay, so this money isn't all mine. Batar de Shachiv Atu Tavinu Liyorshin. After, right, again, this was a case where the people hadn't claimed the money from him ever. And he just says it on his deathbed, I owe them money. So after he dies, those people come and try to claim the money from his inheritors. So, Atu lekameh de Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi. Amar lehu, so they came, the heirs came in front of Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi. And Amar lehu, he said to them, Ki amrin an adam asur shelo lahasbiat atzmo, hanimile mechayim, aval la'achar mita lo. We can only make a claim that this guy wants to not look wealthy when he's alive. But he was on his deathbed. He wasn't planning to stay alive anymore anyway. So what did it matter to him if he looks wealthy or not? So therefore, that's not a good claim, and therefore they can collect the money. Okay? And it's only, right, in his life. So what happened? So the people, in the meantime, it's an interesting case, parupalga. So the yorshim, the heirs, paid half the money. Maybe they didn't have all the money, so they paid half the money. They didn't pay the other half. So, tavinu ledina leidach palga. Time went on, and the guys come, and they say, listen, you still owe us the other half, based on this psak of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. You still owe us half the money. So, atu lekameh de Rabbi Chia. They were smart, what they say. I'm not going to go back to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. We know he's going to make us pay. We don't know exactly why they didn't go back to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. Maybe they were living somewhere else at the time. Who knows? Anyway, it happens they go before Rabbi Chia this time. Amar lehu, he says to them, Keshem sha'adam asur shelo lasbiat atzmo, kach adam asur shelo lasbiat banav. He's got a different way of looking at things, right? Like in all cases, right? There's different ways of looking at it. He says, what do you mean? The same way someone wouldn't want to make themselves look wealthy, and we saw this in Bava Batra, he also wouldn't want to make his sons look wealthy because he doesn't want people going to his sons and trying to claim, you know, money from them or having an ayin hara come on them. And therefore, he says, you actually don't have to pay back the other half. And in fact, right, what he's really saying is you didn't even have to pay the first half. So Amrule, so they say to him, oh, well, if that's the case, Nezal v'nihadr, let's get our money back. We can get all of our money back because really, this guy had no right to claim it. Amar lehu, kfar horazakein. Sorry, you can't go back on that. the half that you haven't yet paid, so I can help you with. But the first half, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi already said so, and I can't overturn his ruling. Now, there's a whole bunch of questions raised about the sugya. And as in general, people say if you ask a psak halacha, you can't change and go to a different rabbi and ask a different psak. So the question becomes, how did they even go to somebody else about this? Again, some people suggest maybe they were living in a different place and you could do it in a different city. Some people say that all of those issues of psak halacha, and this is very interesting, applies only to iser v'heter. And this is dine mamonot. Dine mamonot is different. In that case, dine mamonot, you can always view things from different perspectives, and there's no right or wrong necessarily. And therefore, there's no issue of changing a psak or going to somebody else about this. Some people say it was like a judgment call, right? This particular case, would someone do shelo lasbi et banav or not is a judgment call. It's not a right or wrong answer. Okay, continuing along. Now we're moving on to a little bit of a different thing. We were talking about somebody admitting he owes money. So now we've learned in the past that there's a milva bichtav and a milva baal peh. The main difference being that if it's a milva baal peh and you don't have a shtar, then you can't collect it from lien property. So let's say someone admits that he owes money in front of two witnesses. Vikanu miyado, and he makes a formal act of acquisition, like they do an act, a kinyan with him to show that he really... to verify the admission. Kotvin. They now have rights. They can go write this in a shtar. Even though you could say maybe it was a milval peh, but the fact that he did a kinyan shows that he's willing to have it written. Vim lav, but if they didn't do a kinyan, then ain't kotvin. Then they're not allowed to record it because the assumption is that he wanted it to remain a milval peh. Bifnei shlosha velo kanu miyado. What if he did it in front of three witnesses? Without a kinyan, three witnesses already, we assume it's a beit din. If you're going to do it in a beit din, then it's going to have the status of milva b'shtar. So if he says he admits in front of three people, are we assuming that he's turning them into a beit din, he views them as a beit din, in which case he's saying, I have no problem if you write this as a shtar. Rab Ami Amar Kotvin, so he says, yeah, you're right, this is like a beit din, they can write it. Rab Asi Amar Ein Kotvin. Ravasi says, no, not necessarily. Just because there's three people doesn't mean he intended for them to write it as a shtar. Hava uvda v'chash le'rav l'had Rav Asi. There was a case, and Rav said, I don't want you to write it. Again, this is a case where obviously they can't ask the guy, what did you want? Okay? He's not around anymore or something like that. So anyway, Rav said, I'm going to be choshesh for Rav Asi, and I'm not going to let you write it down, even though he said it in front of three. Am Rav Adbar Ava. Ha'odita, this type of document, that if someone admitted that he owed money, zimnin katvina v'zimnin lo katvina. Sometimes we can write it, sometimes we can't. How do we know? Knife v'yatve, if the three witnesses were already gathered together, sitting like a beit din, then knife v'yatve, then we don't, oh, sorry, if they were sitting, sorry, the opposite. If they were already sitting when he did it, they were sitting down together, then they don't write it because the assumption is he just went in front of a group of people that were sitting there, but he wouldn't necessarily handpick three people to make sure it was three. But kanfinu ihu, if he gathered them himself, then katvin. And then the assumption is he gathered three specifically because he wanted it to be a court and he was willing to have it written. Rava amar, but Rava says, wait, afilu kanfinu ihu, even if he gathered them, lo katvin an ada da amruluhu, havu alai dayane. You have to say the words, be my judges. If you don't say be my judges, they're not considered judges. Amar Ravashi goes even farther. Amar Afilu Amar Havalai Dayane Lo Katvinan Adikave Duchta Veshachay Umizamne Lehu Lebeitina. It's only going to be considered Dayanim if it works like a formal court, which in this case, it doesn't sound like it ever will, because what happened? He invited the judges to be judges. Normally, how does a court work? The judges invite the love, right, the borrower, to come to court, they subpoena him. So only if they set up a place where they want to sit, which is their court, and they invite him, please come to our court, unless they do that, and then he admits in front of them, then it's not, we don't write a document of admission. Hoda b'metaltale, what if he admits metaltalin? V'kanu miyadu kotvin. If he admits that he owes metaltalin, which would be like a loan, and then again, it's whether it's written b'shtar baal peh would be relevant because whether you can collect from land or not would be relevant. Only you would only collect from land if it's written. So if they did a kinyan, then kotvin v'im lav. And if there's no kinyan, then ain't kotvin because we're worried that maybe he didn't want it to be milva baal peh, milva b'ktav. But b'mikarkei, but if it was with land, if he was saying, I owe you land, well, then you can collect land from land. So then there would be no issue, no difference between it being a milva b'alpeh and milva b'shtar, and therefore b'mikarkei v'lo kanu miyado mai. What would be the issue? Can you write it or not? Because you would say, it doesn't matter, milva b'alpeh, milva b'shtar. So ameimar amar ein kotvim, marzut v'amar kotvim. So it's a machloket whether we allow it to be written or not allow it to be written. There's a bit of a debate, a question about if... Anyway, there's no difference, so who cares whether you write it or not? So they give reasons why you might not want to, because there's a few different answers given. I'll mention one of them. Let me just remember the one I wanted to mention. Right. If there was a shtar, then you'll have to save it for 3 years. Otherwise... Right, you need to hold on to it for 3 years to prove it, that you had the land. So therefore, you might not want to have a shtar, because then what if you lose it, or you'd have to be responsible for saving it. Anyway, okay, Ravina ikle l'damaria. Okay, he goes to this place called Damaria. Amar le Rav Dima baravuna midamharia l'ravina. Mitaltale v'itnu b'enai humai. What if they're mitaltale, and I say, you have mitaltale and they're mine? And I see them, they're there. As opposed to mitaltan, you might, if you can't pay me them back to me, so then I'll take it from your land, and then milva b'alpeh, milva b'shtar, there's relevance. But if they're actually physically there, you're just going to give them back to me. It shouldn't matter if it's a milva b'shtar, milva b'alpeh. So amarle kimakarke damu. They're like makarke, right? That basically you're allowed to write it because you're not worried. There's no difference really between milva b'shtar, milva b'alpeh. But ravashi amar kevan de mechasre guvaina lo. Since you still haven't collected them, and maybe by the time I go to collect them, they're no longer there, and then I can start taking it from lien property, if it's written b'chtav, then it would be more relevant, and therefore, we're not going to allow it. Okay, last case for today. Hahi odita de lo avakatuv be, amar lana kitvu v'chitmu v'havu le. What if there's an admission document that the person, it doesn't say in it, he told us to write it, which means that maybe he didn't really want it written. So should we worry about that? This is like what Rish Lakish said in a different context. Damar Rish Lakish, chazaka ein eidim chotmim al hashtar, elem kein naaseh gadol. We also saw this, which is that eidim will never sign the shtar unless there's an issue with the atonement. They can't sell land until they become a gadol, until they're 20. And we can assume that if someone sold land, right, that the assumption is he must have been a gadol when the shtar was written, because no one would sign the document if it wasn't done kehalacha. Okay? So basically, the assumption is if it doesn't say kitvu chitmu, right, that he told us to write it, you can assume he must have told them. Otherwise, they would never have written it. So now, just like we saw when we saw this the first time, matkef la Rav Papi asked, v'yitem Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua. Some people say he was the one who asked. Mi kamidi da'anan lo yadina v'safrei d'beidina yadinan. Not everybody knows that halacha. So how do we know the Sofrim know that halacha knows? How could it be if all the Talmidei Chachamim don't necessarily know that he has to tell them kitvu v'chitmu, otherwise they can't write it? That, how do we know the Sofrim are going to know this? So what do they do? If you remember this, Sha'alinu l'safrei d'abai v'yadeh. L'safrei d'rava v'yadeh. In fact, the Sofrim know these halachot better than the Talmidei Chachamim. So even though all the Talmidei Chachamim don't necessarily know this, the Sofrim actually do know this. And therefore, you can assume that if it was written, that it was written l'halacha.